yellow gold kind of thing. That's the Buddha of wisdom. And then blue is another color that you see these deities, all of different colors, like Vajrapani is blue, and Medicine Buddha, wherever he is blue in color, yeah. And Haruka is blue, and then Yamantaka is like blue-black, real dark, bluish-black color. So yeah, so there's a lot of color, and a lot of it, and it has to do with a lot of things. I guess it lifts up the mind a little bit too. I never heard a good explanation for it, so I just made one up, but I think it does have that effect. Does anybody not know what this is? All right, somebody tell me.
Prayer wheel.
And what's in it?
Mantra.
Yeah, like millions probably. Millions, like on microfiche or whatever. So you just spin it one time. And on the outside, so mantras are a big part of Vajrayana, aren't they? Each Buddha figure, I mentioned this last time, each deity has its own special mantra. So if you're meditating on, for example, Shakyamuni Buddha, you know, that's like, who knows Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra? To be sure. Yeah, tayata. Om mani mani maha mani soha. How about the Medicine Buddha? Any of you tantrikas or? Tayata om bhakanta bhakanta maha bhakanta bhakanta radha samagata soha. That's a short version, and there's a longer one. How about White Tara? Anybody know that one? Om Tari Tu Tari Turi Mahayana Puniyana Pushtim Guru Yasoha. So that's a little longer than the typical Tara mantra. Let's see. Chinrezig, anybody? That's not a big risk for anybody. Buddha of Compassion, what's his mantra? This is the most popular one, and Green Tara, but over here, all of these Tara statues, but Green Tara, her mantra. Yeah, there she is there. And then there's another Tanka of Dasron Chinrezig. Then there's, don't know what that one is. Vajrasattva. Don't we have a Vajrasattva Tanka? I think he's probably over here. Vajrasattva might be hidden and might be one of these. No, not there. So anyway, Vajrasattva, that's one of the practices we're going to do tonight. So that one's 100 syllables. Anybody memorized it? Besides Robbie? Serious? Have you done it?
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it. Hooah! Very nice. So that's what you get to do between now and next week, by the way, is memorize that mantra. Ooh, it'll be fun. That's the most powerful purification mantra in the world. So it's a good one. Anybody here got any negative karma to purify? Raise your hand. Everybody, I want to see all the hands up. Good. Yeah, we all do. We all have work to do. No doubt about it. So, thank you. I like this. So this is a list of things that we talked about last week, but I've got I've got other things to do. Now, what I brought along, I didn't bring along all of the things that I could, but I'll show you these different things that have to. So what is this? What's the word for this? Mala, rosary, right? So what's the bead up here at the top of the rosary? What's that? The guru bead. So what's the importance of the guru bead? First of all, to remind you of your guru. And if you're doing a rosary, do you mind coming up just so you can be in this circle, please? If you're doing like mantras, like this one, some rosaries have 108, some of them have 110, but if you were doing 100,000 mantras of something, or 10,000 or ever how many, you would, usually you'd say the mantra and then you'd tick off, you'd just pull, you know, one bead forward and like that. And usually you hold the rosary at your heart and you'll, so it might be, Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 like that. But when you get all the way over here and you come up to the guru bead, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani, it sounds all very mystical, but you don't go past the guru, you flip it around. As out of respect for the guru. So you flip it around. And most of the a lot of the retreat malas have 110 beads on them, some 111. Most people's bigger malas have 108 beads on it. So that's what rosaries are, something that you see a lot around. You know, people carry them around like jewelry. But you know, theoretically, if you have a retreat rosary, you shouldn't even let other people see it. You know, you should kind of keep it. It's like a lot of the things in Vajrayana. So you remember we talked about how in Vajrayana you don't like tell everybody you do it. You need to keep it quiet. Why? Why is it? What's the point of that? Why would you why would you want to keep it quiet?
It's disturbing energy.
I'm sorry?
Disturbing energy.
Well, that's true, I guess. Do you know anywhere, anybody know where the vajras and bells are?
Yes. We'll get to them.
Hmm. Oh, good. Yeah, so you see Geshe-la and this little hand drum here. Called a Damaru. So this really doesn't, it comes into practice some in the lower tantras. You see Vajra and Bell. Yeah, thank you. Anyway, so these are some of the toys of a tantric practitioner. But he's saying, usually the bell is held in the left hand. I don't do this very well. Anyway, and the vajra is held in the right hand, like at the neck of the vajra. And usually, you might do an offering. Actually, oftentimes when you're doing a sadhana, which is called a method of accomplishment, you know, where you're practicing a deity, you'll oftentimes make offerings to yourself as the deity, or make offerings to a front image of the deity. And anyway, at certain points when you're doing these different kinds of offerings, you might ring the bell like that. Sometimes you'll hold your hands like this, which is, this symbolizes male energy and this symbolizes female energy. All of the bells have a lotus inside of them. And so that the sound of the bell is equated with, you know, wisdom. And then oftentimes they'll use the damarus. Not sure how to, it's D-A-M-A-R-U, I believe. This is one of the damarus that, and this one, these are nice ones, but they always have like a nice tail on them, like this. Geshe-la, and Geshe-sampo knows how to play it. I just don't do a good job with these things. But anyway, oftentimes a little hand drum like that. So you'll see, you know, the Geshe's will, you know, there might be a section in a prayer where you do that, and then you go like this, and the sound of the damaru calls the dakinis, or dakas, I guess if you're a female practitioner, but it calls these special Buddha figures that are helpful in the practice of Tantra, particularly high sugar Tantra. So these are some of the things that you would have, particularly if you did a retreat. But I think when they do guru pujas and stuff, I think they use these, right? They break these out. They don't? They do? Okay.
Excuse me, could I just ask you, are they supposed to be, is this very important, the bell and the dorje?
Yeah.
They must be picked up both at the same time simultaneously, right?
I never thought it. Usually they are. Usually you pick them up. Yeah, it's rare. Yeah, usually you do it both at the same time. So anyway, I'm just diverging a little bit, but since I started talking about it. So these are some of the things that have to do with high sugar Tantra. And then oftentimes there's a little skull cup that's made out of usually silver, but it could be anything. It has some liquid in it, and it's called Dutsi Ribu. It's Dutsi, and it's like the inner offering. So you might see the teacher stick their ring finger in it and flick it like that. The inner offering has a lot of symbolism as well. That really wouldn't be appropriate to talk about unless we had an initiation, which we'll get into in a minute. We'll talk about that. So this is just some of the stuff that, you know, there's a lot of ritual and all the stuff that Catholics are attracted to. That's probably why there's so many Catholics that become Buddhist. But I know as a Presbyterian, I never found ritual. I never saw it. That was the other thing. But, you know, some people are attracted to it. Some people find it it's off-putting. I kind of found it off-putting until I actually was put in a position where I had to do a retreat. And I found it really, really, really helpful. And I'll just leave it at that. It's just so helpful for the mind. Once you understand what the rituals are about and the symbolic meaning of it, and you're doing your best to do something, it does help the mind. So I can say all these things look kind of exotic, but they're really meant, as everything is here, to help us transform our mind. So anyway, that's part one. Now, I want to do actually, you know what? This particular practice that I want to do is in the prayer book, in the gold prayer book. I saw it yesterday. It's called the ever-flowing nectar of bodhicitta. $155 in the gold prayer book. Yeah. So we're going to do a little practice. I might skip some things since we're running on a little budget here, time budget, but this is based on the 8 verses of mind training. And how many people here, because if you've been around Kadampa Center for a while, you may have had an initiation and kept the commitments to Chinrezig. You know what Chinrezig is? The Buddha of compassion, Amanipemiyam, initiation. Anybody have that initiation or empowerment? So that brings up a whole nother story. You're not supposed to visualize yourself as a Buddha. The only practice that you're allowed to do that is actually the practice of Shakyamuni Buddha, if you were into that tantra. But if you're any other tantric practice, you need to get permission from the guru. So you need to go through a particular ritual where you do meditation with the guru, and he or she guides you through the visualizations and that part of it, and then you get permission to see yourself as a Buddha. All right, so that's, and you're not supposed to do that without that permission. So this practice actually has it on 164. It has your rising as the, it says you're in the form of Guru Avalokiteshvara. Wait a minute, go back one. Yeah, then you, on the previous page, you dissolve into light, into emptiness. And on this page, you know, you literally arise in the form of Chinrezig. So every Vajrayana practice has this particular aspect when you begin to imagine yourself as a Buddha. Now, you have to go through this practice of this emptiness yoga where you imagine that, for example, whole universe melts into light, which dissolves into your body. Your body melts into light, and all that energy comes to your heart center, and then that begins to get smaller, and then boom, all you see is spaciousness. What the mind sees is this spaciousness, and what it apprehends is the emptiness of inherent existence, this voidness of fantasized ways of seeing the world. So you have to combine this, it's called space-like meditation combined with this, the correct view of emptiness. So you dissolve your ego, your personality, it's all disappears completely. And from the space of emptiness, you know, motivated by compassion, if you wanted to imagine yourself as, you know, if you'd had an empowerment in Chinrezig, Dasnam Chinrezig, or Form Chinrezig, whatever, you would imagine yourself from that space just arising instantly as this Buddha. We call them deities, meditational deities. But you imagine yourself as thousand-armed Chinrezig with 11 heads and 1,000 arms reaching out in all directions with an all-seeing eye of wisdom in the palm of each hand, reaching out to help countless suffering sentient beings, right? And that's, so you imagine that you're that now. And so you imagine your body is completely made of light, not anything solid. And you also imagine that this is you. Like, this is not a joke. This is not a fantasy. This is really you. You identify with the Buddha. And it's called divine pride. You take pride in being that Buddha now. And you go, well, that sounds crazy, because I don't look anything like that. But, you know, our current fantasy about all the stories and stuff that we've made up about ourselves, imagining ourselves as a Buddha actually is more like reality based than the current self image that we have, which is totally based on ignorance. The Buddha, seeing ourselves as a Buddha, is actually coming from our pure nature, our Buddha nature. So we're connecting with our Buddha nature and saying, okay, I'm going to give my Buddha nature a form of whatever deity I've been told to work with, and our guru can help us choose whichever Buddha that, you know, we're going to practice with, and we imagine that we're that. So that's kind of cool. So we use our powers of imagination and visualization a lot in Tantra, you know, and then we'll go into it a little bit in a minute. But so we're not going to, when you get to this part where 164 says, you're in the form of Avalokiteshvara, beams of light radiating from your body, each one bearing. Avalokiteshvara is this long Sanskrit word for Chinrezig, the Tibetan term, which refers to the Buddha of compassion. Guru Avalokiteshvara comes and sits above the crown of each and every sentient being. Nectar flows. You know, it says we're in the form of Avalokiteshvara, but I think the best thing to do is imagine a Avalokiteshvara above the crown of your head, because we haven't had permission to see ourselves as the Buddha. And then you imagine that Guru Avalokiteshvara comes and sits above the crown of every sentient being. So we're, during this thing, we're imagining that we're surrounded by universal living beings in human form. And Chinrezig, the Buddha of compassion, is coming to the crown of their head. Nectars flow from each Guru of Avalokiteshvara's heart, purifying all the obscurations and negative karma of every sentient being. When all sentient beings are completely purified, Guru of Avalokiteshvara dissolves into each one through the crown of their head. Each being becomes Avalokiteshvara. Now, we can do this visualization of Avalokiteshvara dissolving into us and thinking that our body, speech, and mind are one with Avalokiteshvara, but we don't imagine ourselves as being, again, we don't do the self-generation with this practice. And when we get to this point, we'll recite the mantra, and there are different ways to recite mantras. I'll just tell you a little bit of, normally, when you're in a retreat and you're doing mantra recitation, you're supposed to say it every syllable, like Om Mani Padme Hum. You're supposed to say every syllable clearly, but if somebody was sitting next to you, they couldn't hear you. Good luck with that, right? Mm-hmm. But you say, Om Mani Padme Hum. Try not to make a lot of racket so you disturb other people. But you'll say the mantra, and then if you have a mala, a lot of times they say every time you pull a bead over, you're imagining that you're pulling a sentient being who's going to the hell realm. You're saving them. You're pulling them out of the hell realm. So you can think of that, you know, that you're saving countless beings on Mani Padme Hum. So we'll do the mantra 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, but while you're doing it, you want to visualize that light and nectar are not only purifying you, but countless living beings around us. So this will be fun. It won't take very long. We're going to cut through Lama Zopa's motivation part of it tonight. We'll do it next time, but since we're short on time. Okay, so let's start out by doing, I'll read the introduction and part of the rest of it. What follows is an 8-verse teaching that contains the entire technique for transforming the mind into relative and absolute bodhicitta. So relative bodhicitta is this altruistic intention based on loving kindness and compassion. So it's not just a, you know, wishful thing. It's not just some, you know, great big, you know, fantastic idea. It's really based on genuine love and compassion. That's relative bodhicitta. Absolutely bodhicitta is emptiness. So it was composed by Langri Thampa Dorje Senge, a disciple of the virtuous friend, perfect in all knowledge, Kadampa Padowa Rinchen Sal, who in turn was a disciple of the holy lamp of the teachings, Atisha, of his guru, Patoa's eight heart sons. Langri Thapa was the only one to receive the special instructions on exchanging oneself with others. So there's one of these eight verses talks about taking on the suffering of others and giving them happiness. So that's what they're talking about, exchanging oneself with others. Basically has to do with Tonglen practice, that practice that most of you who've been around for a while know a little bit about it, but we'll definitely do that too next week. And we can actually do some of it tonight. All right, so see if you comfortably generate a particularly virtuous motivation, then do a glance meditation on the Lam Rim teachings from beginning, your devotion to the end with heartfelt feeling, contemplate as follows. So I'll just read a little bit of Lama Sopa's motivation. From beginning this samsaric lifetimes until now, I've experienced the general sufferings of samsara numberless times, especially the sufferings of the three lower realms. There is no suffering I have never experienced. When I think deeply about this, I'm gripped with terror and weep uncontrollably. The point is, we need to be motivated, right, to purify our mind. Therefore, I must no longer allow myself to fall under the control of the disturbing, unsubdued minds, which are the causes of the all-arising truth that oblige me to experience the result, true suffering. However, now I have received the inner condition, the precious human body endowed with eight freedoms and ten endowments that gives me the ability to achieve all happiness and perfection. And I've met with the outer conditions, the holy Mahayana virtuous friend or guru, who's extremely difficult to find, but can in a single second grant the highest state, omniscient mind. Given my incredible good fortune, if I continue to seek mere temporal happiness or my own personal liberation from the bondage of disturbing, unsubdued minds and karma, what difference is there between me and a foolish, dumb animal? Such an attitude would be extremely upsetting from several viewpoints. All sentient beings have been my mother. There's not a single one who's not. Moreover, each and every mother, time without number, and each time has been just as kind to me as my present mother. This very moment, not only are all these kind mothers experiencing great suffering, but they're also running constantly to create the causes for more. That's worth thinking about. Everybody's experiencing great suffering and racing toward creating the causes for more suffering. There is not even a second during which they can experience a moment's happiness. If a mother's suffering is not alleviated by her own child, who else will do it? Therefore, to release our mother sentient beings from suffering and lead them to the sublime happiness of enlightenment, I must attain the exalted state of Buddhahood. The attainment of Buddhahood is not without causes or conditions. Its principal cause are the two bodhicittas. Remember, we talked about relative and ultimate bodhicitta. Relative bodhicitta is this good heart, and ultimate bodhicitta is the wisdom of emptiness. Therefore, I'm going to practice the profound oral teachings on transforming the mind into bodhicitta. All right. Now, at the level of the forehead, and this is a common way to visualize anything in Buddhism, but at the level of your forehead and a body distance in front, length in front of you, is your root guru, manifesting inseparable from thousand-armed Chinrezig, standing on a moon disc that rests upon a lotus. So here you are, and you know you're ready to do these. There are a couple of more prayers to do, and imagine at the level of your forehead and a body length in front, and in this case, on a lotus. You see this as big as you can imagine, all made of light, right? Everything's like a hologram. holographic image, all made of light, a lotus, a moon disc, and then thousand arm chinrezig, inseparable from your guru, the guru that gave you the empowerment, or your root guru. You see that Buddha figure is inseparable from your guru. And here's the other crucial thing, that the guru's mind and the deity's mind and your mind are inseparably one. They're exactly the same stuff. They're empty. They're completely empty of any kind of substantial inherent existence. And that's like one of the most important things in Tantra, is to always try to see your mind, your guru's mind, and the deity that you're practicing as inseparably one. Okay? Real important. All right, then we do the seven limb prayer, which we're going to skip tonight, the mandala offering, all right? And usually you always do these prayers to kind of set up your motivation. The mandala offering has to do with offering the universe to the guru that you're visualizing in front of you. So you're making prayers to the guru deity. You're giving them a whole universe of jewels and everything that's good, because you're willing to, you give them anything to get these teachings. They're so precious and rare. And then there's a request. I always have to request the guru, please grant me all realizations of the path, from guru devotion to completion of the training, unified Vajra state. And the Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamne Yatayami, that means I send forth this precious mandala to you, holy gurus, like that. So then we'll go to the actual practice. And now, if you can kind of get yourself in a meditative posture, and I'll read this to you, and we'll do these 8 points. This is from the 8-point mind thought transformation. With each verse, visualize the seed syllable HRI, H-R-I-H. Now, there's a Sanskrit image of a HRI. And I think it might be the last one there. I'm not sure. Om Mani Padme Hum Hri. I bet it is. I bet it's that last one. Well, if you can, some people like to visualize Sanskrit syllables. That's fine. Or you can just visualize the letter Hri, H-R-I-H, at Chinrezig's heart. Okay? Much blissful white nectar streaming down through the crown of your head. All right, so from the seed syllable Hri at Avalokiteshvara's heart, much blissful white nectar streams down through the crown of your head. It fills your whole body, purifying all obscurations and bringing all realizations of the entire path from guru devotion through Buddhahood, and purifying and granting specific obscurations and realizations related to a particular verse you're contemplating. So in each case, it's white nectar. So the nectar is doing two things. It's coming from Chinrezig, the Buddha of compassion, who's inseparable from our guru, right? And at his heart is the seed syllable Hri. And from that Hri comes this white nectar, and it does two things. It purifies us of all of our obscurations, all of our hindrances, and it grants us a realization of whatever verse we're reading in these 8 verses of mind training. So we're being blessed. So you go, this is not real though, this is all fantasy. We're practicing. We're planting the seeds for us to be able to do that. So just hang in there and give it, and just try. See what happens. We don't have anything to lose here. So the first verse is determined to attain. Let's read the verses together. You got this? Pages 161. Actually, let me read it. You just meditate on it. That's better. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. So this is Lama Zopa is always saying, cherish others, cherish others. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all Mother Sentient Beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. And this is the visualization. Blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from holding others most dear, and bringing all realizations, especially loving, compassionate bodhicitta, which holds others most dear. So you visualize the nectar, not only purifying your obscurations, but granting you those, the realizations, the blessing, the ability to hold others as most dear. And just simultaneously, remember, all sentient beings are, well, we'll get to that one later, but you can imagine all beings around us are having the same experience of Chinrezig above the crown of their heads. Verse number 2, when in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. So when in the company of others, I shall always consider myself lowest of all, because normally we don't think that way, right? Our ego thinks we're the best. Even if we have this, you know, what we call low self-esteem, it's a very self-centered attitude. And from the depths of my heart, hold others dear and supreme. Consider myself lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart, hold others dear and supreme. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from considering yourself the lowest of all and from holding others dear and supreme, and bringing all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta, by which you consider yourself the lowest of all and hold others dear and supreme. So you think, like, the first part is purification, and the second part is bestowing these blessings, the ability to have these realizations. And it said that it's very important, even though we're using our imagination here, we're using, you know, in a sense fantasy, but we're using our imagination. But as much as you can, when this white light and nectar come through you and purify you of the obscurations, you want to think to yourself, I'm now pure. You know, you want to really connect with the feeling of being pure. And then when you get the blessings of being able to see yourself as the lowest of all, that's the, you know, that attitude is very congruent with helping to develop bodhicitta. Then we think, I've developed that, blessed those realizations. I've developed, those seeds have been planted for me to have that realization. So again, you want to use your mind to train itself, to purify itself, and to plant the seeds for enlightenment. The next verse. Vigilant the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. That's pretty cool. The moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. It's so important to be mindful, so that whenever the mind is being swept away by some afflictive state of mind. You know, the principal ones are greed and hatred and ignorance and pride and jealousy. But there's actually 84,000 delusions. So whenever our mind is, whenever a delusion arises in our mind, we, you know, we confront it and avert it without delay. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from confronting and averting, delusions the moment they appear, and bring all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta and the wisdom of shunyata, which is synonymous with emptiness, which automatically extinguishes all delusions. To the white nectar. You know, cleansing us. Feeling that any obstacles that are, that would keep us from recognizing delusions as they arise have been removed. And then that nectar brings realizations of loving, compassionate bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness, which automatically extinguishes delusions. And you want to feel that you've been purified and feel that this nectar has blessed your mind with this ability. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. And why would we hold difficult beings who are tormented by violent negative actions and suffering, why would we hold them as a precious treasure? You know, because they teach us. This is how we learn. We don't learn from people that make our lives easy. We learn from difficult, challenging situations. So how do you learn patience? You got to have an enemy. You got to have somebody who pushes your buttons. Without patience, there are no bodhisattvas. Without bodhisattvas, there's no enlightenment. So your worst enemy is actually your ticket to enlightenment. It's our ticket to enlightenment. So these tormented, suffering beings who we tend to hate actually are worthy of our compassion, and we should be grateful because they're teaching us, helping us to develop these good qualities. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from holding wicked sentient beings dear, and brings all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta, which holds wicked sentient beings as dear as a precious treasure. Again, the nectar purifies and then bestows these realizations. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insult, to the like, I shall accept the defeat and offer the victory to others. This one's a hard one. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. I The Dalai Lama always points out that, you know, you've got to be skillful about this. If you can take a little hit, so to speak, if you can accept the defeat, it's not going to cost you your life, you know, but it would be good for your ego to, like, let go and take the hit, take the defeat. You know, it's a great way to train the mind. It's a great way to train the mind. Because we're so dominated by egocentricity, always wanting to be right, the best, you know, and so on and so on. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from accepting the defeat and offering the victory to others, and brings all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta, which accepts defeat and offers the victory to others. Purifies negativities, obscurations, and then gives us the blessings of the realizations to be able to accept defeat and offer the victory to others. This, again, this light's coming from the Hri, right, at the heart of Jinrisik, right? Entering the crown of our head and, you know, completely washing us pure and then granting us these blessings. When someone whom I benefited and whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall regard this person as my holy guru. So when someone whom I benefited and whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I should regard that person as my holy guru. Again, this is being challenged, not only is it of my own this is just the karmic fruition of my own former non-virtuous actions. This is how we think about it. This is how we can train ourselves to take responsibility for every part of our life, even the stuff that we don't understand, even the stuff that seems like we're obviously a victim. But understanding karma, we're never a victim. Our whole life is created by karma, seeds planted in this and former lifetimes. So we need to use this opportunity to see in this person as like a guru. It's like teaching us like what we did in the past. It's just coming back. What goes around comes around. I don't want to have to experience this again. I want to practice virtue, avoid non-virtue, that kind of thing. So we look at adversity, at people who challenge us. We see adversity as like precious, precious opportunity to train our mind. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from seeing beings who harm you as your holy guru, and brings all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta, which enables you to see harmful beings as your holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers, and I secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. So that's Tonglin, isn't it? That's Tonglin. In short, both directly and indirectly do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers, kind mother sentient beings, right? So we're offering happiness and benefit to all living beings who've been like our mother in previous lifetimes, and we're secretly taking all their harmful actions and suffering. So giving them happiness and the causes of happiness is the action of love. literally the Buddhist definition of loving, of love is giving beings happiness and the causes of happiness, and then imagining that we're taking on their suffering and its causes. That's compassion. That's the, it's not compassion, but it's the definition of compassion. Love is a feeling. It's a, there's a feeling of, there's something in the mind that, and the body. It's in the body-mind. It's something that we can actually experience, loving feelings, the experience of love and compassion. Again, it's not the words, may you be free of suffering and its causes. It's that feeling associated with those words. It's behind those words. So Tonglen, giving happiness, taking suffering. I mean, when you're in front of some difficult people, very powerful practice to do in daily life. Imagine giving them happiness and taking on their suffering. The blissful white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those who prevent you from offering every happiness and benefit to all mother sentient beings and secretly taking upon yourself all their harmful actions and suffering, and brings all realizations, especially the loving, compassionate bodhicitta, which offers every happiness and benefit to others and accepts all their harmful actions and sufferings. You know, may you be happy and have the causes of happiness. And may you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. So this is in the form of giving and taking, right? We're giving loving kindness and compassion, and we're taking suffering. Sometimes it's taught the other way around, where you take the suffering first and give, but there's a reason to do it this way too. Undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, that is empty, be released from the bondage of attachment. Undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly concerns, may I, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, like an illusion, be released from the bondage of attachment. That's the practice, that's the day-to-day practice of emptiness, is seeing, understanding that we create our reality, and that there's no substantial reality independent of our mind. So it's like an illusion. And these 8 worldly concerns have to do with things that we find delicious, right? And the things that we don't like, that we find distasteful, right? So everything in the world that you think is great, and it's kind of like piled into 4 categories. Gain, let's see, pleasure, gain, fame, and praise. Those are the 4 delicious things. Everything that's delicious is in those 4 categories. And then the other side of it, the stuff that we feel aversion toward, we attach to not having, right, are pain and loss and disgrace and blame. So that's, we're clinging to this stuff over here, this deliciousness, and we're clinging not to have this stuff. We fear it. We dread it, right? We dread losing stuff. We dread pain. We want to avoid it at all costs. Disgrace and blame, we want to avoid it. So the mind is never at peace. It's always clinging to this, pushing this away. So we can't really enjoy anything. Maybe we can have some fun. We can have some sort of taste of fun, I mean of joy, but not pure joy. So we need to let go. We need to see that everything is as if it's an illusion, as if illusory. Okay, that's what this verse is about. Thus white nectar purifies all obscurations, especially those that prevent you from perceiving all phenomena as illusory, and brings all realizations, especially the wisdom of shunyata, that's a Sanskrit word for emptiness, which perceives all phenomena as illusory and by which you are released from the bondage of delusion and karma. So the white nectar purifies you and then grants you these blessings and realizations. Then make the following request. Most compassionate one, please extend your holy hand and lead me and all other sentient beings into your blissful pure realm after this life. Be our virtuous friend forever and quickly lead us to Buddhahood. Think. The Guru Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of compassion, accepts your request and sends innumerable nectar rays into your body. Now you want to imagine that the Chinrezig Avalokiteshvara in front of you accepts your request and sends all these nectar rays into your body. All obscurations, negative karma, diseases, harm from spirits are instantly purified. Your body becomes as clear as crystal. Then Guru Avalokiteshvara melts into light and absorbs into you. So you can imagine that all the visualization in front of you of Chinrezig Avalokiteshvara melts and it absorbs into you. And your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Avalokiteshvara's holy body, speech, and mind. Now you don't, again, we're going to visualize Chinrezig above the crown of our head. So this is the mantra recitation in the form of Guru Avalokiteshvara above the crown of our head. Beams of light radiate from your holy body. Actually, it would be from the holy body of Chinrezig above the crown of your head. If you were doing the practice as if you'd done the self-generation, though, you would imagine that you're now Chinrezig, right? And that, like, you're a Buddha now. You're thinking, I'm a Buddha now. And all of this light radiates from your heart. And what does it do? Let's see. All right. What happened? Beams of light radiate from your body, each one bearing Avalokiteshvara at its tip. Guru Avalokiteshvara comes and sits above the crown of each and every sentient being. So all you're surrounded by universal living beings in human form, and above each being's crown is Chinrezig. Okay? You got Chinrezig above your crown, and above everyone else's crown. Nectar rays flow from Guru Avalokiteshvara's heart, purifying all the obscurations and negative karma of each sentient being. When all sentient beings are completely purified, Guru Avalokiteshvara dissolves into each one through their crown, and each sentient being becomes Avalokiteshvara. So you do this visualization. We'll do the absorption at the end, but we'll do the visualization. We won't do many mantras because we don't have that much time, but we'll do, I'll do one rosary, 110 on this rosary. We'll do it. And, we can do it. I have a different tune than the one, this is the Vajrapani tune, but we'll do it together. And as you do it, you imagine, again, using your powers of visualization. Now, some people say, well, I can't visualize, I can't see that much detail. But we all can, you know, if I said visualize your car or your house, you'd have an image in your mind's eye. That's, and for some of us, just having a sense of it's there is good enough. Alright? Sometimes all you can see is light. You do the best you can. For some people, they can see them. Their powers of visualization are incredibly detailed. I'm so fortunate to be able to do that. But as we do the mantras, we visualize it above the crown of her head, all of this light and nectar is coming from Chinrezig. And not only purifying our negative karma and obscurations, but that of countless living beings, as Chinrezig purifies everybody. So we'll do that as we do the mantra together. And it's maybe we'll start out doing it together, and then we'll do it. You can do it silently. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Again, you see all this light and nectar purifying you and countless living beings coming from the heart of Chinrezig. When all sentient beings are completely purified, Guru Avalokiteshvara dissolves into each one through their crown, and each sentient being becomes Avalokiteshvara. So here we are. We have been instrumental in purifying all living beings of their obscurations, and now they're inseparably one with the Buddha of compassion. And you know, we pray to become enlightened, to benefit all sentient beings and guide them to their own enlightenment. Here we just did it. We just enlightened all sentient beings in the form of Chinrezig. And so imagine that we did that, you know, that this really did happen. We did this practice. We purified ourselves and all beings, and everybody's been blessed, you know, to become Chinrezig. in this dedication. May all the suffering, we'll do this together. If you've got the book open, may all the suffering and causes of suffering of all sentient beings ripen upon me right now, and may all sentient beings receive all my happiness and virtue. May the precious bodhicitta that has not yet arisen and grow, and that which has been generated, never degenerate, but increase forevermore. May I never be discouraged, even for a moment, from practicing the deeds of the bodhisattvas for the sake of others, by completing, announcing anything done for my own sake, and engaging in the holy actions of the kind founder, Guru Shakyamuni Buddha. Through these merits, may I quickly attain the state, the great compassionate one, and without exception lead all mother sentient beings who are most high and noble to that enlightened state. All right, so that's one tantric practice. That one's in this book, but again, it's in this book too. I don't know if anybody bought this little book online. Now, I'm going to jump ahead to what I want you to do next week. Those of you who are, I think next week is our last class, right? So, yeah, I'm just getting... Anyway, wish we had more time, but we just don't. Not this round. So this book, what did we do with the? I lost my. Vajrasattva. Do we have any? Yeah, the little one. Do we have a bunch of them out there? Oh yeah, yeah. So, if you have, you can get these, you know, you can bring it back, you can keep it if you do the practice. Yeah, I had a copy, but I lost it somehow. All right, so, if you can memorize on page 14, we already have at least a couple of people that have memorized this longer mantra. But there's a tune. Is the tune online? Do you know? Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Jiro Mebawa Sutokaya Mebawa Supokaya Mebawa Anarate Mebawa Sarvasiddhi Mebrayacha Thor Kama Suchami Chidam Sriyam Kuruhum Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Savatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mutra Vadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Aham Pe. So if you can memorize that mantra, it really makes this practice come alive. We'll do it next week for sure. The purification practice. If you can do that, if you can memorize that mantra, if you can't memorize the whole mantra, you could bail on it and just do Om Vajrasattva Hum, which is the short-ish version of it. But it's better to do the whole mantra, to make the effort to visualize this. And as you do this mantra, it's described in here. You visualize it that, you know, that this particular deity, Vajrasattva, is above the crown of your head, and this light and nectar is coming in. And there are three different visualizations. There's one where it completely comes from top to bottom and purifies your body of all the negative karma that you've ever created from countless lifetimes up to this very moment, right? So you do it. And if you can do it, you can do it slowly or you can do it fast. If you can get really, you know, good at it, you might be able to do a mantra like really quick. Who can, Ravi, let me hear what your fastest one. Out loud, I want to hear it. Huh? He's being too shy. But you can do it fast, right? You can go, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manabalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dita Mabawa Zitaji Mabawa Zibaji Mabawa Adate Mabawa Zalatiri Mabawa Jaza Wakama Zijini Tiyam Sriyam Guru Hem Ha 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 Ma 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 You got. You don't want to be doing one a minute. You know, you'd be forever. So you know, you want to learn how to do it the slow way, and then you want to learn how to do it the faster way, particularly If you're going to, it's nice to do 21 of these every night before you go to bed to purify negative karma of body, speech, and mind. This is a cool practice. All right, so we have enough time to run through some didactic stuff. No? Yep. All right. So these are this. And I'm going to give you, this is, those of you who want to become certified teachers, whatever that means, you can, this is the quiz. This is the quiz. I've lost it. Sorry, Aaron. I'll find it. Maybe it's here. I do have it. All right. Well, maybe I'll go over it next time, and I'll actually have you give you a handout. I'll give you the quiz, and then you'll have everything you need. Go ahead.
I was trying to remember, I know that Venerable Amy talked about the Vajrasattva practice. I want to say it was like 2013 or 2014 or something. So I was looking for that, and I didn't come across it. But if you go to our recordings and you just search for the word Vajrasattva, there's actually, this is not the YouTube, but the recording. So there might be stuff on YouTube as well. I'll see what I can find. But there's a couple classes in June and July of 2015 with Don giving these like longer explanations of the Vajrasattva practice in preparation for a weekend retreat. So I haven't listened to those in a really long time, but there's also from 2016, Rinpoche, and it says Vajrasattva 100 syllable mantra. So I suggest, like, sometimes we forget what a great resource we have at Kadampa Center. Like, we have libraries of information that are amazing in the recordings and the YouTube archives. But Brian, how far back does the YouTube archive go? They keep it for like 4 years. Okay. Oh, that's maybe when we started doing it, was 4 years ago. So check for stuff there, and then you can, if you're trying to learn the mantra, you can look at some of those resources and see what's there. I will say, don't give up if you don't do it in 1 week, or like Don says, it takes 30 minutes. It took me years for some reason. Like, I would try and I would write it down and I would do it while I was walking, and I tried all kinds of different techniques to memorize it, and it didn't work and it didn't work and it didn't. And then I was getting ready for the weekend retreat that Don led in 2015, and somehow it clicked. So all I can think is that maybe somehow I purified enough to be able to learn it, but I'm not the only one.
The tune is very helpful though, isn't it?
The tune is helpful.
I think the tune is very helpful for beginners. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, just as a way of review and go over the stuff that was originally mentioned. So, Tantra is, you do see Tantra, actually in Zen Buddhism, there is some Tantra, practice evidently in that tradition. And anybody who's ever practiced Zazen, done any Zen retreats, they're always telling you to see yourself as a Buddha, right? To see yourself as a Buddha. So it's very tantric. They don't go through all of the ritual and the visualizations that we do, but one of the main directions is to see yourself as a Buddha. So Tantra is really the specialty of Tibetan Buddhism, and you don't find it in Hinayana, right? The word Tantra means continuity or stream. So, and it's the continuity of the consciousness, from unenlightenment to full enlightenment. And then we talked about the different terms that we use and sometimes secret mantra. Because, for example, in Hasyoga Tantra, particularly in Hasyoga Tantra, the images, you know, like there's sexual, the iconography has a lot of, you know, it's very sexual. I mean, they're male and female and, you know, in sexual union, and you go, well, that's pretty interesting. What's that got to do with spirituality or transforming your mind? But if you don't understand that this is working with, you know, you're using this visualization to bring, you know, to allow the blissful consciousness to arise, and then to destroy the afflictive part of the bliss, the affliction, the afflictive desire, and you're left with this really blissful mind that you can do some work with, because when the mind is blissful, it's also very satisfied. So you can use that blissful awareness to meditate on, develop concentration, develop wisdom. Very powerful state of mind to be able to harness, but not easy. You have to be very advanced. But the point is, it's secret. We call it secret because it doesn't need, people need to have an understanding of the three principles of the path before they get exposed to these esoteric teachings. And then to really practice Hasyoga Tantra, you really have to have a qualified teacher, a real guru, somebody that you can trust with your spiritual, your spiritual life, your mind, because they're gonna help you choose the deity that's gonna be best for your mind, your certain predispositions that you have. Certain people might do better with Vajrayogini, this lady of fire who's like full of, even men, you know, see themselves as females, by the way. Men, in one tradition of Buddhism, Vajrayogini is like the main deity practice, and it's a woman. She's beautiful, 16 years old, body made of light, fire coming out of every pore. She's all about passion and, you know, that kind of energy. How can you transform that kind of energy into enlightened consciousness, that kind of blissful awareness? So, you see, there's a reason for it to be secret. It doesn't really need to be, you don't really need to talk about it. We've got even, Kala Chakra's got something over it. It didn't have it over it for years. Remember that at the old center? We never had it covered up, but when the Geshe-la moved in here, they covered it up. All right. Mantra means mind, and man means mind, and tra means protection. So mantra is mind protection. There are these Sanskrit syllables like Om Mani Padme Hum, and it protects your mind. So when you're doing mantras, you're protecting your mind from what? Delusions. Okay? So this is part of why we do mantras. And that you count mantras in retreats. Usually there's verbal recitation, but it can be mental recitation. Then we talk about tantra being the resultant vehicle. Remember that? We talked about that last week. Does anybody know why it's a resultant vehicle? The sutra is the causal vehicle. Yeah, go ahead. Why is it resultant?
You imagine the result being present now?
Yeah, exactly. So that's so different, right? You know, in the sutra practice, we're accumulating the causes like ethical self-discipline, developing concentration, developing wisdom, developing renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness, all of these attitudes. Whereas in Tantra, you know, we're imagining ourselves, we develop, every tantric meditation starts out with a very powerful meditation on bodhicitta. I must become enlightened in order to sit there. You know, you have to have this impatient compassion that cannot bear the thought of your kind mother sentient beings from suffering another minute. If you've got to stop their suffering, okay? And then you meditate on emptiness, and all your ego, everything that you know about yourself, all your stories about how you can't do this and you could never get enlightened, all of that garbage. You connect with your Buddha nature, which has unlimited potential, and you and everything dissolves into emptiness. Okay, and so then motivated by bodhicitta, this compassionate wish to become enlightened, this, you know, we emerge as the deity, basically the manifestation of wisdom and emptiness and compassion, made of light. And we imagine that we are that. And then what you want is what's called clear appearance and divine pride. Clear appearance, seeing yourself as a deity, what is that? Can you imagine when you're 80 years old and you look at yourself and you see yourself as your image of yourself is as a perf, as a 16-year-old with no wrinkles and everything is perfect. There's no flaws. You're flawless. Your mind is pure. Pure compassion, pure wisdom, pure, you developed every quality, right? That's who you see yourself as. You have divine pride. You think, I am that deity. So that divine pride in seeing, you know, this clear appearance of yourself gets rid of ordinary appearances. Okay? You don't see yourself as ordinary anymore. You see yourself as extraordinary. And then this divine pride, this I'm a Buddha now. So we've imagined, we've taken our Buddha nature and ripened it into a fully enlightened being, right? And then we imagine ourselves as that now, and we go, I'm a Buddha now. Now, you cannot be crazy to do this practice. This is why it's important. Some people are flipped out, you know, because they're not mentally stable. So you have to have it, you have to be able to distinguish between reality and fantasy, right? We're using this technique, but at the same time, you're also saying to yourself, I am a Buddha now. And that gets rid of ordinary conceptions. So seeing clear appearance eliminates ordinary appearances, and seeing and having divine pride in yourself as the Buddha now gets rid of ordinary conceptions. So these things go together when you arise as deity, right? All right, resultant vehicle, quick path of desire. We talked about all that last week. Three principles. Oh, empowerment. I talked a little bit about that, but you know there's a great empowerment and a sort of lesser empowerment. A great empowerment though can go on for 3 days. A lesser empowerment might go on for like an hour or two or three. But these are given by a qualified tantric master, a guru, and they're giving you permission. And in the old days, it was almost like a one-on-one thing. But nowadays, empowerments are given to anybody just about. But you have to decide if you're qualified to take the empowerment or not. If you're not, like if you go to an empowerment by the Dalai Lama, let's say he frequently gives empowerments, for different deities, but he gives a lot of empowerments, and you can take it as a blessing, which means that you're not ready to practice, but you are going to take it as a blessing. Okay, so it's okay to do that. If you're ready to do the practice, then you do all the visualizations because the guru will guide you through the sadhana, which is a little book, usually a little booklet. It's a practice that you'll do every day where you generate yourself as the deity, and then you're doing a dress rehearsal for your enlightenment. You're practicing being a Buddha now. And so you imagine yourself as, from the space of emptiness, you imagine yourself as a Buddha, it could be Haruka, could be Chuck, it could be Yamantaka, it could be any one of the Buddhas, it could be Tara, Chinrezig, whichever one it is. Imagine you're that Buddha now, and then you say the mantra, and you're sending out, billions of rays of light which purify and bestow realizations on all sentient beings, and that light comes back into your heart, and you send it out again, and you know, expanding and coming back. It's part of the practice as you say the mantra. It's a very active process where you're seeing yourself as a Buddha now, and then you're actually doing the actions of a Buddha, which is what? Helping beings purify themselves and helping beings develop their qualities. Okay? So imagine that you're doing that. You know. So then unexperienced pleasure. Okay. Oh yeah, this is another way of thinking about it. Because I've talked a little bit about this, the energy of desire. Our unexperienced pleasure, content, satisfied, exhilarated, although one short step away from clinging desire. So what we're trying to develop is this really blissful awareness, but it's not the delusion or the affliction of desire. It's just one step away from this. So we're cultivating this experience of pleasure, and it's conducive to single-minded concentration. It's necessary to cultivate wisdom. In the sutra, it's difficult to cultivate conditions. Tantra, it's much easier to develop single-minded, single-pointed concentration in Tantra. Why? Because of the bliss. Because you can cultivate a blissful awareness, and when you have a blissful awareness, you don't want to do anything except focus. Your mind doesn't go anywhere. Your mind, when you get the blissful awareness that you can generate in tantric practice, your mind's like a laser. You know, when you think about it, that just the pleasure or the joy that comes along with that's unique. But it says they often liken it to fire. Fire depends on wood to burn it, right? And a person consumes the fuel that that it depends on. So sometimes they liken desire is like the wood. Alright? I'm sorry. Desire is like a worm. This is a weird analogy. But desire, when you do tantric practice, you generate this desire From the blissful awareness, which is like in the wood, then comes, imagine that a worm comes from that. And the worm is desire. And then I'm getting it backward. The worm is wisdom. The worm is wisdom. The wood is desire, and the worm is wisdom. So from the wisdom, like wood, comes this worm. And then the worm turns around, eats the wood, eats the desire, eats the afflictive desire. So then what we're left with is the bliss of the that's left when you remove the affliction of desire with wisdom. So we have wisdom and bliss in one moment of mind. We have wisdom and bliss in one moment of mind. And there's nothing else that more powerful to meditate with than that kind of mind. And then we talked about the four classes of Tantra. I've talked about the initiations, the deity yoga, the Vajra master. Very, very important that we find a qualified teacher. And you can check your teacher out for years and years if you have to. You don't just take the first person that rolls into town. There have been some real bad things that have happened in the name of gurus, you know, people being taken advantage of. And I'm not talking about just men, I'm talking about women too. Women gurus and male gurus taking advantage of their disciples because they weren't qualified, and the disciples didn't check it out. They didn't check out their teachers. So the prerequisites for an initiation, at the very least, the aspiration for renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. So if you wanted to take a tantric initiation, you'd at least have to have the aspiration for renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness, an appreciation of tantra as a valid path for transforming the mind. So you got to have faith. You got to have faith that tantra is a valid path for transforming the mind, and confidence in the Vajra master, in the guru. Okay? Must be someone who you can see as a Buddha. The disciple needs to be able to see the guru as a Buddha. So I think that's enough for one night. But those three things, again, for you to take an initiation, you got to have some real respect and heartfelt desire and connection with the teachings on renunciation, which is the determination to be free of suffering, and bodhicitta, which also is like compassion for yourself. And bodhicitta is universal, based on universal compassion for others, and emptiness. Then you have to have faith and confidence that tantra is a valid path, and that it's something that you really want to work on. And then you have to have confidence in the guru. So let's do the dedication verses on page what? Page 246 in the Gold Book, Gold Prayer Book. So before we do that, next week we'll spend some time. I'll try to. If you've done some additional reading, I'm also going to hand out. I've got it at home. I put it in the wrong bag, unfortunately. But I've got the quiz that actually, and it's all you really need to know about this course. I'll hand it out, and we'll spend some time going over that. But then we'll do the 8-point. We'll do the meditation, this one again, and we'll do the Vajrasattva meditation. So how much time do we have next week? We're going to start at 6.
Next week we start at 7 and we wrap up at 9.
Yeah.
It, or, you know.
Thereabouts.
I'm sorry to add to this. I have two quick announcements. The gold booklet is offered freely from the Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive. If you would like to donate to them, that is the organization. Just ask me if you don't know about it. But they do offer that. And I did upload a version of Venerable Lama saying the Vajrasattva mantra to the tune that makes it easier to learn. It's on the Discovering Buddhism material page. So you can just go straight to that page and look at it.
Okay, thank you. All right. So merit is like this. It's the good, it's the stuff, it's all the good karma that we've created tonight by just, you know, coming, putting your life on hold for an hour and a half or more, and coming over here and then making an effort to, you know, pay attention and try to find something that you can use to develop your mind. So we call them, we think of it as like positive seeds that we planted. When positive seeds always ripen, even one little tiny seed always ripens into happiness. So we planted lots of, individually and collectively, we've created a lot of virtuous seeds. So we want to dedicate that, and we'll do it with this Master Shantideva's dedication prayer on 246-247. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering in the body and mind, paint a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing and the hungry find food. May thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. Those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, all ten things may I to remain to dispel the miseries of the world.